This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
It is another edition of Phillies Today. I'm your host, James Seltzer. It is Friday, May the 29th, also known as the 10-year anniversary of the perfect game Roy Halladay threw one day in Miami against the Miami Marlins. We will dive into that and a lot of Halladay stuff coming up, as it's really a day to remember Roy Halladay, obviously, because of the 10 years since the achievement. And also tonight on ESPN, the E60 documentary called Imperfect, about Halladay and his struggles and, you know, with addiction and a number of things that obviously have been talked about a lot, and his wife Brandi Halladay in the documentary and a part of that. And you know, obviously such strength and fortitude from Brandi Halladay in this situation to you know, have the toughness to be willing to share the darker side of her husband's story. Along with the positives, obviously, the amazing baseball achievements that we're going to talk about in a little bit. But for her to have the toughness and the strength to be willing to share his story, so maybe that hopefully it could help somebody else, you know, that it could do something for someone else who's struggling with similar issues and the, you know, things that Roy dealt with. And I'm just really impressed with the toughness and strength that she's able to show in regards to her husband's memory and all that. So coming up in a few minutes, we're going to dive into the Halladay thing as we head into the weekend and a day to remember Roy. You know, you don't need to hear more of my thoughts on where we're at from a MLB owner, player, negotiations, dispute, whatever you want to call it right now. Situation is, you know, if you want to, you know, go back and listen to the shows from the last past few days, as it has been obviously the sole topic of conversation, as you know, the proposal to the players came this week and their massive disappointment with the proposal, and you know where I stand on the player side, definitively, heavily. But also, I just want to see this end and see cooler heads prevail, and the Bob Nightingale article we talked about yesterday, where he feels obviously incredibly confident with many strong quotes in that article saying there will be baseball, it's going to happen, all that stuff. And, you know, I'm going to hope that Bob's right. I've been optimistic this entire time. I have felt like in the end, there's too much to lose for baseball to not have a season on, for everybody, for the owners, for the players, for everybody. And I know it's been, as we talked about, you know, very antagonistic and acrimonious and not a positive back and forth so far. And obviously, as we've talked about, they have really come off looking like all fools in front of America, and America that is, the last thing that it needs right now is to see millionaires and billionaires fighting about money. You know, it's just literally the last thing. It would be like the last thing on the list of things we need right now, you know? So We don't need to get more into where I stand on that and all that. I just did want to mention something that happened yesterday that Jeff Passan tweeted out just as we talked about the Oakland A's on the last show about the Oakland A's having decided to get rid of all their minor league players, not pay them for the rest of the year. It was $400 a week per guy. For the rest of the year, there's going to be no minor leagues baseball, obviously, this year. But those players, they decided not to pay them for the rest of the year. Again, we talked about the fact that the owner is worth $2 billion, over $2 billion. But it would only cost $1 million to cover those players for the rest of the season. But they elected not to do that. And then Passan later in the day yesterday tweets out the following. Across baseball, hundreds of minor league players were cut today and lost their job, sources tell ESPN. Hundreds more will be released over the next week. In the end, upward of a thousand players could see their baseball careers end. The minor leagues have simply been devastated. Next tweet. In normal years, cuts happen, but not en masse like this. The fallout from coronavirus expected minor league contraction and the anticipated cancellation of the 2020 minor league season prompted organizations each to release dozens of players who would be paying $400 a week. I felt remiss not to just mention this before we talk about Halladay, and you know, I know we don't need to dive too much into, you know, more stuff about how baseball is the worst right now, but this is just such a bummer. $400 a week per player is not a lot. You know, that is not a obscene amount of money to pay a minor league player, especially when ultimately the people paying them. And I know these owners are taking losses, you know, and all that. But owners, again, in this case, the Oakland A's worth $2 billion and it costs $1 million to pay for your minor leaguers for the year. I mean, you know, it doesn't feel right. You know, $400 a week is already, you know, not a lot of money for someone in that situation to begin with. Like, it's not like this is like a massive amount of money. Look, it's more than a lot of people have right now are getting unemployed and all that stuff, but it's not a massive amount of money. And it's just really disappointing to see this happen. I think it's really bad for the long-term health of baseball. Obviously, I think the minor leagues getting decimated, and that's the phrasing that's used. You know, that's bad. It's bad for baseball's future. And again, I'm not saying it's a death knell or anything. You know, I'm optimistic they're going to play this year, and that I'm always an optimist when it comes to baseball. It's my favorite sport for a reason. I love it, and I you know, hope and pray that it will thrive in the future. But this is a big blow, like Passan said, and you hope that, you know, those players you'll be able to restock, and you know, obviously they're still the top prospects or in a contract and guys like that who you know, aren't going, or the people will be on the 50-man roster, and there'll still be people. But this is really disappointing. Like, org guys are important in the minors. Guys who spend their career minor leaguers too are valuable to organizations. Like clubhouse guys who can, you know, really be good enough to play at a certain level, but not in the majors, can, you know, get guys ready for the majors, and to in many ways, you know, you've seen Bull Durham. I mean, there's a part of that too. You know, that idea is not untrue, in some cases, as well. So it's just it's a bummer, and I feel terrible for those players who've lost their jobs. You know, it adds to the obviously millions in America who are going through that right now, and it's just a bummer because, again, it's just at a time where baseball is really sitting in front of America with a black eye, a black stain, you know, just a real nobody is happy with baseball right now. Nobody. The NBA, NHL going about their business quietly with no disputes, and they're figuring it out. And they might not have it all figured out yet, but they're not making promises. They're not fighting in public over money. They're like, we'll figure it out. We're going to do this. Just give us some time. We'll figure it out. The NFL is plowed ahead with their offseason and the highest watched draft of all time, all this stuff. And then, you know, baseball, sitting here looking like a joke, a clown show, you know, in this situation where, you know, again, all the eyes of America are watching as there are no sports. It's a bummer. So let's hope that Bob Nightingale is right and the ship can be righted and something can be done to fix this. But for now, why don't we talk about something that you know, is better. The memory of Roy Halladay, significantly better, way better. You know, obviously we lost Roy far too young, and now we're learning, you know, all that he was going through in his life and all that type of stuff, and it makes it all that much more tougher to deal with and all that. But he was among the greatest Philadelphia Phillies I've ever seen in my life. And obviously not in terms of longevity. He was only here 4 years and really 3 years, and really two of them were peak Roy Halladay, and you know, the other one was not, and the third one or the fourth one, you know, he just wasn't able to make it through. For those 2 years, again, on the short list of best Philadelphia Phillies pitchers I've ever seen, and his 2010 season might be the best season I've ever seen a Philadelphia Phillies pitcher have. I think it probably is. Yeah, I mean, obviously the run Cole had in 08 and the playoffs, Schilling had some monster seasons back in the day. But, you know, that 2010 season for Halladay with the 21-10 and the, you know, 219 strikeouts to 30 walks, wins the Cy Young. He was second in the Cy Young the year later in 2011. And obviously in 2010 also becoming one of a short list of pitchers who have thrown two no-hitters in the same season and doing one obviously in his first playoff. So we'll dive into all that. Really an amazing, amazing pitcher. And also off the field, an amazing someone who's so dedicated to his craft and to getting better. I mean, he has become, you know, the stories of him and his workouts and, you know, his again, attempt at perfection, which as we know, that can be a double-edged sword, as we'll see with this documentary, but attempts for perfection and were legendary. I mean, he was a monster competitor and someone who thrived to get better, someone who felt obligated to be great. And to do it for his teammates and to do it for the organization. I had Ruben Amaro on the High Hopes podcast with Jack Fritz and I, and he talked about a story how like Roy would text him after he, you know, had a bad start. It wasn't even a bad start. He was like a, you know, a non Roy Halladay vintage start, and he would apologize, and it was wild. You know, it's something where, you know, Halladay was really committed in a way that most players and people aren't, and really it came through. You know, again, when the Phillies traded for Halladay and sadly traded Cliff Lee immediately at the same time, we were hoping that we didn't get that till, you know, the year later when Cliff would come back, and who knows, they might have won the World Series in 2010 if they had had Cliff Lee, but you know, that's neither here nor there. It is something where that season was regardless of the Cliff Lee thing, getting Halladay, getting the guy who we knew, you know, from the Blue Jays was one of the best pitchers in baseball and probably the best pitcher in baseball. You know, if you had to pick, you know, Pedro's heyday was a little bit before. Obviously, Pedro was kind of down by then. You know, Cliff Lee was one of the great pitchers in baseball. CC, you know, but Kershaw, obviously, but like Verlander was you know, still going strong. But Halladay was the best pitcher in baseball at the time, and the Phillies got him, and he came here, and in that first season just so completely delivered on every level. Again, 10 years ago today, a perfect game in Florida against the Marlins. A Ronnie Paulino grounder, Juan Castro, an amazing play, a really nice play to end it. There have only been 23 perfect games in Major League history. I mean, some and fairly would argue 24. You know, Armando Galarraga did throw a perfect game if it wasn't for the obviously incredible blown call. He would have had a perfect game, but regardless, you know, this is a rare thing. A very rare thing. Perfect games are special, obviously. I mean, 23 in this year of baseball. I mean, think about that. We always talk about, you know, how many, you know, people have hit 500 home runs. A lot more than 23. Maybe not a lot more, but definitely more than 23. I mean, there are those peak numbers in baseball that are so important, like, or the things like how many 60 homer seasons have we had, or how many this, that, or whatever. I mean, 23 perfect games ever is a really low number. You know, it's you would have expected more, to be honest, over the history of the game. 23 is really impressive. And Halladay with one of them in a Phillies uniform. And I remember watching the last few innings, and it was exhilarating. It was, we couldn't believe this guy was ours, that Halladay was ours. And then for him, later that season, and I think I would most would probably argue even more impressive than a perfect game, even though it wasn't one. In his first playoff start, which was all he cared about, was getting to the playoffs and getting the opportunity to pitch in the playoffs against a very good Reds lineup, was able to rise to the occasion to the level where he threw only the second playoff no-hitter in the history of baseball and only allowed one base runner. Jay Bruce, the only one who gets on base in that game, got a walk. And it, you know, questionable call on a called ball instead of a strike there, too. I mean, Roy Halladay, literally in his first chance to pitch in the playoffs after waiting his whole career, a Cy Young winning, you know, pitcher, started the All-Star game for the Blue Jays. Like, again, the best pitcher in baseball coming over in a lot of people's estimation at the time. And in hindsight, to come over and finally get a spot, a chance to start in the playoffs, and to be able to live up to who you are to such a level. And it's a funny thing because, you know, you usually catch the last inning or last couple innings of a no-hitter or whatever because you get an alert or you get a text. And again, at Phillies, it's not like they've had that many. Millwood and Mulholland and, Hamels, the combined one. And I've watched parts of those. Like, I remember I watched the last three innings of the Hamels one because I found out he was throwing a no-hitter or last two innings or whatever it was. You find out, and a lot of times maybe you're lucky. You know, maybe it's one of those nights where you're in front of the TV and you're just watching. For me, that hadn't happened until it's a playoff game. I'm watching every Phillies playoff game start to finish, not missing any and all that. And I sit down and I watch every single pitch of a playoff no-hitter from Roy Halladay where he was just lights out. Like, it was one of those things where you could tell in the first inning, the first two innings, you're like, oh, Roy brought it today. Like, big time brought it. Like, his stuff was as sharp as I've ever seen it. It's probably the best, I'm sure it's the best start to finish game I've ever watched pitch in my lifetime, especially considering the stakes. You know, maybe some incredible World Series performances that I'm not thinking about, I'm sure. Maybe a Josh Beckett outing back in the day or something, but it's hard for me to think of a game, Pedro, maybe in a couple spots. But it's hard to think of a game where I remember watching from the first pitch to the last, not missing a single one, and being so utterly blown away by the pitcher as I was in that game in the moment with Roy Halladay. And again, look, it's one of two playoff no-hitters in the history of baseball ever. We're just talking about 23 perfect games is impressive. Only two playoff no-hitters. And granted, the other one was a perfect game. And again, only one walk. Like, it wasn't like one of those no-hitters where it's like six walks and an error. Like, one walk. There was one walk, all right? Like, he was nearly perfect. Nearly perfect. And his stuff was perfect. I mean, his stuff was perfect. No one was hitting him that day. No one. And again, the Reds were a good lineup. and it just wasn't happening. Like, there was no way it was happening. Really, it's just one of my fondest memories. Certainly my fondest, I think, out of the holiday era as a pitcher here. And, you know, one of my fondest Phillies memories, you know, is obviously looking at. We've not gotten many big wins in my lifetime. Obviously, 08 and, you know, 93 was fun. And then the run, the 07 to 11 in general. And obviously that a part of it with that win and that moment really. Again, I'm getting chills just thinking about being there, sitting there where I was watching it and what it felt like to watch that type of utter dominance, that type of best to ever do it. So one of the best to ever do it, doing it at the top of his level in the biggest of moments. Those are, you know, that's why you watch sports. You watch sports for that type of stuff, for the greats in the big moments to do great things. You know, I think like at the crux of it, that's one of the biggest reasons we watch sports. Not the only reason, of course, but one of the big reasons you watch sports is you want to see the best of the best do the best in the biggest moments. And that was a really picture perfect example of that. And I'll never forget it. And I'll never forget the holiday era here. Again, I think for those 2 years, arguably the best pitching I've ever seen from a Philadelphia Phillies pitcher in my lifetime. Was just a joy. It's just a joy to have that guy here. And again, I know how it's ended is tragic. I mean, that's no other word. I mean, that's the only word that you can use that appropriately displays what's happened here. I feel lucky that we got to have him here, even though it hurts more. And look, it would hurt anyone. It's a tragedy. But, you know, it hurts us more here. It hurts, I'm sure, people in Toronto. I'm sure it really, that was a really tough day for them, a tough time. And because we knew Roy and we got to see him and he means something to us. But I'm so happy we had the opportunity. When I think about him, I think about how happy I am that we had the opportunity to have him here. And again, both on and off the field, the what he did off the field is the leader and good person and was funny and, you know, weird in a good way. And, you know, with, you know, after his career, we kind of do funny stuff, the social media where he's at Disney World and the guy in the holiday jersey is like, you know, do you think he knows or whatever it was. It was really funny. Like, he had a good sense of humor, it seemed, and he just seemed like a really wonderful guy. And obviously now, you know, we find out that he was fighting a lot of his own demons and, he made mistakes and he's human. We're all human. That's the thing. I feel like one of the things that we forget to do the most when talking about sports, when criticizing athletes, or even when trying to explain something, poor performance or whatever, we fail too often to account for the fact that, you know, and obviously that athletes are humans too, and that they can have human things going on and that can be a factor in, you know, why a performance changes or why this or that. They're going through something that happens. We're all people. And I think that's obviously evident with Roy, and it's such a, again, just a tragedy, but, again, I have to be, you know, you just have to be so impressed with how Brandy Halliday is handling it, what she's trying to do with the platform to help other people. And, you know, my heart goes out to her, her kids, their whole family for the loss. And again, just, I hope she knows that all of Philadelphia is just grateful we got to know the guy in a small way, that we got to spend every fifth night with him and, got to watch the brilliance that man was able to exude on the mound. And it was a pleasure to have Roy Halladay here and to watch him pitch. And you know, I'll never forget it. And you know, again, my heart goes out to his family. And you know, obviously it's a shame, and we'll mourn his loss for a long, long time. But again, one of the greats, and certainly one of the greatest Phillies of all time, even for the short time he was here. All right. It's been fun to reminisce about Roy, and obviously it'll be tough to watch the doc tonight, but I think it'll be good to see the story and support Brandy and the family and all that anyway, that all of us can. So stay safe, stay healthy, everyone. And, you know, hopefully next week we'll come back. We'll have some better news. We'll have some, baseball is going to happen and everyone's going to stop arguing about money type of news. Fingers crossed. Maybe not going to be that, but if nothing else, some positive news either way. We'll, of course, be here to talk about it. So until then, again, have a happy, safe, and healthy weekend. And until Monday, thank you for listening to another edition of Phillies Today right here on the Phillies 24/7 Network.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.